Cool.
I am Plot on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Jordan Tannehill joins me now. He has been described in the Globe and Mail as a zeitgeist savant and as someone who has, quote, had perhaps the single most extraordinary success of any Canadian theatre artist of his generation. Mr. Tannehill is also curator in residence of Push Festival's Club Push. I'll get him to tell us about his role and Declarations, which is on Saturday, the 6th of February, at the Fox Cabaret on Main Street. Visit pushfestival.ca for tickets and information. The show brings together 15 Vancouver residents for a party. Jordan Tannehill is a playwright and filmmaker based out of Toronto. He runs Video Fag, an arts venue in Toronto's Kensington Market, and is the recipient of the Dora Maver Moore Award for Best Play for his work, Concord Flora. He is also the recipient of a Governor General's Award for English Language Drama, among many other awards. He recently published the book Theatre of the Unimpressed, In Search of Vital Drama. His website is at jordantannehill.com. Please welcome to the Plot on the Line program in Ottawa today, Jordan Tannehill. Mr. Tannehill, good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So tell us about this piece on February 6th at the Fox Cabaret here in Vancouver, Declarations. I said it's 15 Vancouver residents that you've curated and put together. What exactly happens that night?
Well, so the night itself is actually the closing night of the festival at Club Push, which is the festival's hub. And it's a very specific environment to create a show in or a performance in. I had to kind of think about what I could do that wouldn't kind of hijack or stop the party vibe, but in fact actually work with it. And also in that space, the Fox Cabaret is a former porn theater, which has now been turned into a performance venue, and it has a very specific kind of energy and architecture. And so I was trying to think about something that would respond to those very specific conditions. And the piece is inspired by work by artists, I guess most strongly by a choreographer named Jerome Bell, who works with very simple gestural scores, often with non-professional performers, to create either dance pieces or happenings. Also, like Tina Segal, the British-based visual artist, who again works in a kind of similar vein. And the piece, as you said, features 15 performers, Vancouverites, a combination of amateur performers, professional artists, and non-performers alike. And they begin stating a series of declarations that all begin with the words, "This is." And they're very simple declarations. Some of them are, I guess, more complex than others, or more poetic than others. This is my hand. This is the first time I've spoken in front of a group this large. This is my friend Paul, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's, with each declaration, there's a corresponding gesture that they perform. It's a very simple score, but within that very strict parameters of the performance, is created quite a cacophonous, large choreography that overlaps and layers onto itself and builds to a kind of crescendo. And you sort of get this I guess, kind of immersive, playful, slightly overwhelming, I suppose, sensation of being surrounded by people engaged in this task. And the piece plays out throughout the party. And I suppose kind of occasionally interrupts the party, but also is kind of it at the same time. So that's the piece, and I actually created a video project called Declarations, and it features a performer from Toronto named Liz Peterson. And this piece is actually an hour and 45 minutes long, and she performs 1,000 declarations in a row with, again, a corresponding gesture. So in a way, this piece, which I'll be screening as part of the evening, as a kind of surprise, I suppose, this is an exclusive scoop that you're getting right now.
That I
see them as very much a kind of companion pieces.
Did you watch The Office, by the way?
I don't know it super well. I have seen a few episodes, excerpts of episodes.
Yeah, see, the thing is, I was reading up on this idea of the declaration. And one of the Steve Carell character in The Office, who's the manager of the thing, he has financial problems. And so the accounting staff is helping him out, try to solve through it. And one of the options that he's presented with is bankruptcy. And so he comes into the office one day and at the top of his lungs just says, "I declare bankruptcy," thinking that's all he has to do. And so that, for some reason, when I've been preparing for our chat today, I've been thinking about that. Because there's something about saying something out loud and in front of a bunch of people that means a lot more than, say, well, I don't know, a tweet or leaving a voicemail or something like that. And so this idea of the declaration in the course of putting this together, is that something that means, say, a lot more to you?
Yeah, and I think in some ways it's about, in some ways, sort of a centralizing or boiling down what it is that we do when we perform in front of a group of people. We're kind of putting forward, I suppose, maybe a truth, for lack of a better word, whether it's the truth of the character that we're performing or our own truth. But it's we're making a statement, we're engaged in some sort of action or activity, even if it's just stillness. That is in of itself a gesture. So in a way, trying to find a score that is simple, but also allows, I guess, it allows the score to highlight the individual. So if everyone is engaged in a very simple score that is, in a sense, kind of baseline, I think each individual performer is able to be quite highly articulated as an individual within it. I think that's the, I suppose, maybe the one of the intentions with the piece.
Yeah, and it endows the statement, the words, with a lot more meaning, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if they're kind of essentialized and in a way, the language is kind of boiled down to, it's a very, very elemental kind of composition.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy for any of us to write, say, 400 words, but to you know, boil it down to 4 or 3.
Right.
Or 15. Mm-hmm. I mean, that takes a lot of skill, doesn't it? A lot of work, at least.
I think maybe Marina Bronvik said this. I'm not necessarily a huge fanboy of hers, but I do respect some of her work. And she said, I think it's a lot more difficult to do something very simple. And I think that's true. And I also am personally a fan of open texts, whether in fiction or poetry or in drama, certainly, a text that allow me, as either a viewer or as an interpreter of the text, a lot of room to negotiate with it.
And can you tell us?
Myself.
Yeah, pardon me. Can you tell us about some of the 15 people that will be a part of all of this?
For sure. A few of the individuals who are performing live in a number of them actually live in the suburbs of Vancouver, and I think three of them are involved with a regional theater company called the Langley Players.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a few individuals who live more centrally in Vancouver, including Milton Lim, who is an artist who is part of the local collective Hong Kong Exile, and a number of them are friends of friends who I know in Vancouver. It's kind of a very eclectic, diverse range of people of different ages, cultural backgrounds. We have a few people from Coquitlam. Mm-hmm. And Surrey. It's kind of great for me, as someone who's not from Vancouver, to have a sort of crash course in all these various neighborhoods. In a sense, get to know through a collaboration a variety of local residents.
So your club pushes curator in residence. Is that role, I'm interested to know what that role is, but does that allow you to spend a lot of time out here?
It does, yeah. I mean, I'll certainly be there for the entire festival, and I was able to fly out to Vancouver for about a week earlier in the year. What it is, I mean, it's a good question, and it's something that is, in fact, being articulated by myself and the festival as we sort of make it up for the first time. This is the first time this position has existed. And I do a lot of curation along with Willie Mellis through our space, Videofag, in Toronto. And that really involves seeking artists and projects out that we are interested in and that we want to give space to present or to develop. And I think Push invited me out there really to engage in artists, well, first of all, engage in the festival with the festival and the incredible artists that are being presented this year and next year, but also to bring artists to the table who I have worked with potentially at Videofag or who I know of, and to help forge a dialogue between some of the artists I'm working with in Toronto and the Vancouver Ecology. I've been a huge fan of Push for many years. I think it has done extraordinary things for the Vancouver performance scene. It's, I think, the preeminent English language performing arts festival in Canada. And so it's an exciting opportunity for me to be immersed in the work that's being presented here. And I will be responding to the work through a number of online essays over the course of the festival.
So you published a book last year, 2015, that looked at theater critically. In terms of our scene here in Vancouver, do you care to comment on what's going on in this town and the sort of performances and the theater companies in Vancouver?
For sure, and I wouldn't be necessarily a self-professed expert on the Vancouver scene, but I have admired it for many years, as have, of course, many others. I think Vancouver has a very vital performance scene, and actually has been certainly largely in part, or in some part, cultivated by the Push Festival, or certainly supported by the Push Festival. Mm-hmm. There are so many interesting companies who are really who are making vital theater, who are really questioning why, what is the relevance of theater in the 21st century? How can we make it? How can we make being in a room together as strangers or as friends a kind of exciting, enlightening experience? Like, I find everything that I see coming out of theater replacement, the electric company, those companies are making work that really charges us with understanding why it's a live event, why this is not a film, why this is not a book. Their work feels imminently relevant, entertaining, enlightening, and of course always innovative. So I think there's a lot of really, there's kind of the sort of Vancouver school of performance, I suppose, through the 2000s and the 2010s with Boca de Lupo and Wiki Heaven, the companies I already mentioned, mm-hmm. The CHOP. There's a kind of a new generation of companies coming up, including Hong Kong Exile, I mentioned earlier, Milton's company. And they really seem to be all kind of engaged in asking questions about what theater can do and what it means for our contemporary lives.
I talked to a guy from Halifax on this program last week, and he's got a piece coming to Push. And I was fascinated to know what the scene was like in Halifax. Do you get to travel outside of Toronto? And I mean, you mentioned your visits to Vancouver, but throughout the country, is there a Canadian theater?
Yeah, for sure. I'm assuming you're probably talking about Stuart, right?
Stuart Legere, yeah.
Yeah. It's a very small world. In fact, Stuart developed his show, Let's Not Beat Each Other to Death, at Videofag. In fact, one of his very earliest incarnations of the project was seeded at Videofag. So it is a small community, and we do hope to, I like to think we support each other's work, and we're engaged in a kind of critical dialogue about it. Maybe not as much as we could. I do think that, we are ultimately a collection of regional centers, and sometimes, Toronto doesn't know enough about what's happening in Vancouver or Halifax and vice versa. But there is definitely a vital scene out in Halifax. I've had a chance to collaborate with a few Halifax-based artists, including Christian Berry of 2B Theatre, who are doing very interesting things out, and have been for many years out on the East Coast and around the world. And festivals like Push, like Magnetic North, like Summerworks, give creators like us an opportunity to see what, you know, each other are up to elsewhere in the world. And certainly the internet has made that kind of communication much easier in the last number of years.
Now, audiences, obviously, for theater aren't as high in numbers as, say, movies or sports. But do you find, though, that if given the opportunity, because, I mean, you just look at the theater listings in this town, there's something to go see almost every night of the week. Toronto, I'm sure that it's multiplied in
yeah.
terms of the size. But if given the opportunity, people will want to go to the theater, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, I do think there is an audience for it, a populist audience for theater, and not necessarily even, you know, kind of mind-numbing spectacle, but challenging and provocative theater. I think there is actually a populist audience for kind of for all sorts of theater, and that has been proven time and time again. I'm not. I think, unlike many people, I'm not concerned, I suppose, for a lack of future audiences. I think there will be. I think theater makes and can continue to make a better case for itself, but I think it has made a very good case for its relevance and why it's necessary and why it's always been necessary and will always be necessary. So the question is, how can we continue to tap into and diversify our audiences and not just continue to play to the same, you know, middle-class white middle-aged crowds, which tend to dominate a lot of our demographics, but how can we engage in the diversity and plurality of our communities that we live in?
And that demographic, as you know, is dwindling, so it is the right time to diversify and to build, rebuild, say.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of, you know, I think if you go to the Push Festival, I think you'll find very diverse audiences, and that I think that's a result of the programming. The programming is diverse; it speaks to multiple communities, multiple interests, and it's not surprising that a variety of audiences will come out to engage in that work. But you know, certainly if you go to larger urban centers, New York, London, and Toronto to a large extent, I do find myself encouraged to see the hunger, I guess, for great live performance. It's still there, very much there, and my desire is just to see a few less white faces in the audience and try to, especially at larger establishments, and trying to find ways in which we can continue to activate different communities.
So this book of yours, which I've already mentioned, Theater of the Unimpressed, it came out last year, and the reviews, I haven't read the book, but the reviews I've read were quite favorable. Have you seen, has it become, say, a source of discussion for the theater community in throughout the country? I don't know if it's soon enough that it's changed anything, but has it sparked discussions, and have you been a part of some of those?
Well, it has, and which I'm, you know, very I guess excited about and thankful for. There have been many informal discussions that I've had with individuals in passing or online or at various social functions, and there have been more official conversations, including actually a panel discussion that will be happening as part of PUSH during the festival, in which the book actually is going to be kind of a launching point for a panel on critical discourse within our theater. And, in fact, it will be the basis of a panel as well, coming up at another festival in Canada in June. I hasn't been announced yet, so I can't give any more details than that. But there are a number of official kind of opportunities to have public exchanges in the next few months about the book. And it's just always very encouraging when you receive an email from someone who's read it or whose class is in the process of reading it. And you know, whether a kind of positive or critical reception, thankfully it's mostly been, I guess, positive, but whatever the reaction is, I'm always very thankful that people have taken the time to engage with it and to respond.
So I cited the Globe and Mail earlier, and in them talking about you, another quote that I've seen attributed to them about you is that you're described as the poster child of a generation of artists for whom interdisciplinary isn't a buzzword; it's a way of life. Did you say that, or conversely, is that how you see your career from here on end? I mean,
I didn't say that. That's a quote from Kelly Nestruck. He's a theater critic in Toronto, based out of Toronto. So that's his quote. But I guess he's responding to the sort of, I guess, omnivorous way that I work as an artist, which is that I don't tend to identify with a specific discipline exclusively. So I would say that I'm a playwright as much as I'm a filmmaker, and as much as I'm a writer, and at times work in the visual arts context as well. So I think a kind of interdisciplinarity is something that's quite common, actually, in our kind of, you know, the kind of postmodern cultural sphere we operate in. There's numbers of people, you know, a number of artists who are moving quite freely between disciplines, and who are, I think, at least in my case, who I try to allow the project or the idea to dictate which form it takes, and to engage it accordingly, as opposed to trying to cram every idea into the strictures of a play or a theater or a stage. Sometimes something lends itself better to cinema or to a gallery installation, say, or even an abstracted piece of dance than it does a play with dialogue. So I try to allow the idea to dictate the form.
So a piece like Declarations is, say, the confluence of everything you've done, or not everything you've done, but certainly a number of aspects of the things you've done. You mentioned this video piece that'll be part of Declarations.
Yeah, that's right. That's true, yeah. There is a number of forms of work. I would say probably it cleaves most closely to a kind of performance happening, I suppose, and then, as you said, it's kind of accompanied with a video piece. So, yeah, it is quite representative of the way I work.
I guess I worry when I hear people being described, especially artists, as versatile, that it's because of necessity. It's because they need to survive, to make ends meet. But for you, from what I've seen and what I've read of you, it's as Mr. Nestruck said, it's a way of life, isn't it?
It does feel, I guess, natural to me, and I do really admire people who really dedicate themselves to one craft, you know, who say very clearly that I am a poet or I'm a painter, and I have great admiration for that. I think I'm too maybe I have ADD, I don't know, but I feel I'm so it can be sometimes a magpie sort of to the next shiny piece of metal. I do tend to follow whatever it is that I'm curious about in that moment, and I guess for whatever reason that does take multiple forms, and some of which I'm more adept at than others, I suppose, but maybe it takes a kind of great sort of self-deluded naivety just to kind of pursue it regardless. But yes, that does feel like the most natural form to me. I think it's important to pursue one's curiosity and see where it takes you. But I don't operate in that manner just out of financial necessity, although I can understand how that, I do think a lot of artists often do take on projects or work that they maybe not their passion as a way of paying the bills, and I certainly have done that in the past, and thankfully I'm fortunate to do less and less of that at the moment.
Well, growing up as a kid, say, did you always want to write?
I did, yeah. From a very young age, I wanted to be a writer, probably an actor as well. So I think I'm kind of doing what I have always wanted to do since I was a kid, which is kind of an amorphously creative job. As an artist, as a creator, as a sort of storyteller and maker of worlds, I guess.
That's a pretty good, you know, business card, makers of worlds.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess we do, you know, as an artist, you do make a kind of world, even if it's a very small one, with a, whether it's with a poem or whether it's with a video piece or a dance. It's a kind of invitation to an audience into a different world each time. And I see that very much as a sort of extension of whatever I was doing as a kid, you know, when I was playing with my friends and my brother. That's sort of what we did. We made worlds together, and I sort of didn't really stop doing that. I was fortunate not to have to.
So in speaking to Stuart, I read a little bit about Video Fag, the thing that you mm-hmm. co-created. I understand you live there, is that right?
Yes, it's Will and I live there. It's an old barbershop that we renovated back in October 2012. And there's the front space, which is not much bigger than the average sort of, I don't know, suburban living room, I suppose. And uh-huh. then behind it is a kitchen and a bathroom and two bedrooms, which we call home.
Yeah. And you have events there, I guess, most of the year? Or how does that work?
Yeah, that's right. We program the space year-round. Uh-huh. There's about three or four things we do a week when it's kind of one night off programming, but we also do sort of runs of plays, which run Tuesday to Sunday nightly. We have a play running at the moment, which is by Jesse Lavercombe called Love You Forever, Billy H. Tender. And we announced our season of programming for the winter and spring a few months ago, so we're kind of just in the midst of moving through that at the moment.
Jordan, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. It's a fascinating conversation about you and the work that you're doing here at PUSH. All the best, and urge people to go to Declarations on Saturday the 6th.
Thank you so much. Well, I can't wait to come to Vancouver.
The website for more, jordantannehill.com. The tickets for Declarations, as I said, that's Saturday the 6th at the Fox Cabaret, pushfestival.ca. Jordan Tannehill joined me on the line from Ottawa in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunto.